Welcome to Drive Time Talks. I'm your host, Donna Rudy, coming to you from Washington, D.C. In this episode, Group Vice President, General Counsel, and Chief Legal Officer Sandra Phillips Rogers hosts U.S. House Majority Whip James Clyburn at a live Toyota virtual town hall. Congressman Clyburn talks about his fight for America's children in the next CARES Act, ensuring that funding is spent efficiently, effectively, and equitably. Buckle up, policy drivers, because Sandra Phillips Rogers is driving this inspiring episode of Drive Time Talks.
Good afternoon, everyone. I hope you are in good health and safety. Majority Whip Clyburn, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. We know that this is a busy and critical time, and so we appreciate you're doing this town hall with us. We have invited our suppliers and dealers from throughout South Carolina, as well as our team members from Alabama, Mississippi, Texas. I know everyone is excited to get started, so let's jump right into it. There's been much said about the need for additional COVID-19 legislation. What is your sense for how Congress will address the pandemic moving forward?
Well, first of all, let me thank all of you for having me today. And thanks for your taking time out to participate. Let me thank Toyota for its tremendous impact here on South Carolina. You all are impacting around 6,000 jobs in our state with an impact of over $3 million in philanthropic giving. We have passed four pieces of legislation dealing with COVID-19. First was a pretty small package. The request coming from the White House at the time was something like $1.8 or $9 billion. We recognized immediately in the House of Representatives from what we were seeing that that was not adequate for what needed to be done right away. So we increased that package to close to $9 billion to deal with telehealth and protective equipment that we thought was needed right away. There was even some support in that small package for small businesses. That did not work, and we right away did a second package. When we focused on the family, trying to support families that we knew would be impacted. My memory serves, it may have been somewhere around $400 billion. But even that, we knew right away was not enough. So we did a third package. We called it the CARES package. $2.2 trillion to provide forgivable loans to small businesses, including small manufacturers and many of your suppliers. It also includes $260 billion to expand unemployment benefits. And of course, another $150 billion for state and local governments. And almost immediately, within 48 hours, we knew that something else had to be done. This pandemic was a pandemic, not an epidemic. It was a pandemic and was going to have tremendous impact on this country like nothing, some people are now saying, since the Great Depression of 1929 and early 30s. So then we went back in and did what we call an emergency funding of the CARES package, this time to the tune of $400 billion. Once again, to focus on small businesses and to focus on the community. This time, we saw some of the shortcomings of the first one, where small business, as defined in the legislation, 500 or less employees. When small businesses defined by a significant number of us in the Congress would be stores and shops on Main Street, flower shops, dress shops, other little businesses, family owned. They got left at the altar, so to speak. These people made applications and the financial institutions going by the rules that they'd always gone by, making loans to their customers first and to people who they thought had the ability to pay it back. And people who they did not think had the ability to pay back, they didn't approve their loans. That was a problem for some of us, especially me, because we had negotiated. And the Fed had decided to take those loans off the books. So the risk was almost non-existent. And needless to say, that was still a problem. So this time, we put stipulations. We put a $60 billion set aside, $30 billion of which had to go to a small, what we call community development financial institutions, so they could participate in making some of these loans. Credit unions. So once again, people at the grassroots level and people who represent those at the grassroots level could participate, because this is where These people had relationships. These small companies, these small stores, mom and pop operations, as some people will call them, their relationships with these small banks, community banks, small community development financial institutions outside of the banking industry, as well as credit unions. And so they were not allowed to participate the first time out. So now we corrected that in this package. And we know now that there is going to be a CARES 2. It is being developed as we speak. I don't know what that number will be. I think that we have got to look at what is required, not just to open business back up, but to sustain it. I think the worst thing we could do here is to open back up and then find ourselves in worse shape come the fall than we were in the early spring, because all the experts are now saying we will have a revisit of this virus in the fall. What would be the impact of that if we have a revisit? Well, it means that our children could lose a second year of school. Many of them have lost a year already. Now, some people say, well, no, they have not lost. They were allowed online learning. Well, that gets us to what the big problem is with me and what I'm going to be fighting for in this next package, CARES 2, and that is, number one, we got to have testing. And what good does it do to have testing if you don't have tracking? If someone tests positive, what happens to that person? You can't send them back home. And then where did that person pick up the virus? With whom that person had contact since picking up the virus? So now you've got to do tracking to find out where that person has been, who that person has interacted with, and that requires manpower in order to get that done. And then third, once you do the tracking and that person tests positive, you now got to isolate. You can't send the person back home to their children and grandchildren, to their family members and to other folks. That person must be isolated. Does that person have the capability to isolate? Is that our burden, our responsibility to provide for isolation? I think so. And then you got to have treatment. Now, what's happened to the children all of this time? Well, let me give you an example of a school district in my congressional district. Clarendon County School District number one. I always point that out because that is the school district that Brown v. Board of Education got started over 60 years ago. Now, if you go back and do the research so that no one go off and say I misled you, it is Clarendon School District 1 today, but it was like 23 in the 1940s when the case first got started. That school district that started us to school integration, today, the households in that school district got an internet adoption rate of 34%. That means that 66% of the household in that district are getting left out of this online learning. So what are we going to do if they lose a second year? And we all know that any student, an eighth or ninth grader, losing 2 years out of school, chances are that person will never, ever go back to school. And that person will become a burden. So I'm fighting very hard to do this testing and to find out what we need to do about tracking, what we need to do to isolate, what we need to do to treat, what we need to do to support the children that are being exposed to this or being affected by it, even without having been exposed. So this next package is going to be very, very critical. I have called for massive mobile testing. I've called for expanding our definition of essential workers. Sure, it's essential for nurses and nurses' aides and nurse practitioners, doctors and their assistants. They are essential. I think that people who work in grocery stores, people who work in drug stores, these people are essential. People who are driving modes of transportation, be there a bus or a train, that is subway train, getting people back and forth to work. They too are essential. So we've got to start thinking who the essential people are in this process. I'd run afoul of a few of my colleagues because I don't support us going back to work without taking care of the people who mop the floors, take out the trash, and do what is necessary to keep the Capitol open. I don't believe, and I'm not going to get in front of them. I'm not going to ask to be tested to go back to work, and we have not tested those people who are supporting the building that we're going to work in. And I've told everybody, we ought to be third in line behind the people who take care of the building and the staffers who take care of our research, et cetera. And then comes Congress people. That's why I was against us going back today, though the senators are going back, they're a smaller body. But I'm told that 20,000 people are necessary to keep the Capitol going. So why would we have 1,000 tests for Congress people and leave the other 19,000 people out of the equation? We got to stop thinking so provincially when we come to something like this. And this thing has exposed exactly what's wrong in our system. When I said that this gives us an opportunity to restructure things in our vision, what is that vision? That vision is of a country that offers, as we say in our pledge, liberty and justice for all. Of a country where access to health care, to education, to housing are accessible and affordable for everybody. That's my vision.
What can you tell us, Congressman, about your thoughts about the auto industry getting back to work in South Carolina?
I want to see Toyota up and producing automobiles. Toyota, 6,000 people or jobs affected here in South Carolina. Now, if those 6,000 people go back to work tomorrow and then we get revisited with the virus, where are we? So we got to be very, very careful. Now, for us to be effective with this, I said we've got to have mobile testing. Why? Because when I talked to the governor about mobile testing, the governor of South Carolina, that is, 2 weeks ago, and we talked again this past Friday, McMaster and I are pretty good buddies. We don't agree on anything politically, but we do agree on the health and welfare of South Carolinians. And we're trying to work out now, how do we get these people tested? So he said, well, let me send you my list of sites. He sent me 17 sites where he was doing testing. Guess what? Not a single one of those sites is in a rural area. Every one of them in around Charleston and Columbia. And I said, what about those people commuting into Charleston, commuting into Columbia? What about those people coming off Johns Island, James Island, Wapalot Island, Edisto Island, down in rural Charleston? They're coming into Charleston to work. He admits that that's a shortcoming that we got to work on. So what we've got to do is work together to figure out how we can get the testing done, get the tracking done, get the isolation out of the way, and get the treatment underway. That's what we've got to do with all of your suppliers and all of your workers here in South Carolina. Now, there's a rather quick way to do this. I've been working with Senator Warner, who made his wealth in this kind of business, about what we can do about making broadband accessible in the short term. We need to build out. It'll cost us $82 to $86 billion to build out broadband throughout the entire country, but that's something we got to do. We've got to do that if we're going to adequately educate our children. We need to have a network of community health centers. It'll cost another $65 billion to do that. But just think about that. We spent that $150 billion to build out healthcare centers, what would some people call them, clinics, and to build out broadband 100% throughout this country. That's $150 billion that will prevent us spending $2.2 trillion, which is what we got to spend now in response to this. And we haven't stopped spending yet.
So, Congressman, just with our time remaining, could you please leave our Toyota team members, our suppliers and dealers who are on this call with some last thoughts of hope as we continue during this pandemic?
I would say to all of your folks, let's not give up hope. I use myself as an example. I ran for office and lost three times before I ever got elected, but I never lost hope. because my parents told me, like many of your parents and grandparents told you, if at first you don't succeed, try and try again. We want to make sure that three things take place. Number one, this money is spent efficiently. Number two, this money is spent effectively. And number three, this money is spent equitably. That, in order to make sure that it's not just the Congress people being tested, but the people who sweep the floors, polish the furniture, and keep the building open for us to do our work, that they get tested as well.
So, Majority Whip Clyburn, I want to thank you again for joining us today and for your leadership in Congress.
And that's it for Drive Time Talks. Thanks, policy drivers, for listening. May faith and hope be with you. This is Donna Rudy signing off from Washington.